On this week's episode, we discuss Viola Davis's Emmy win, the campaign to defund Planned Parenthood, and John Kasich's promise to sign the Down Syndrome Abortion Ban Bill. Enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Gabe.
Hi, I'm Randy.
And I'm Jamie.
Okay. So this week, very serious news. It was the Emmys on Sunday.
Yay!
So it was pretty cool. The big news out of that was Viola Davis won. She gave an amazing speech.
Yes.
She said, "In my mind, I see a line, and over that line, I see green fields and lovely flowers and beautiful white woman with her arms stretched out to me over that line. But I can't seem to get there, no how. I can't seem to get over that line." She continued by saying, "That was Harriet Tubman in the 1800s, and let me tell you something. The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity."
Mm-hmm. I love that speech.
It was incredible.
Yes. Yeah. And she is the first African-American woman to win in this category ever.
So she won like the big actress in a drama.
Yes, yeah. Lead actress in a drama.
This is the big award for women.
Exactly. The third to the last award of the night.
Right.
And then they do the men and the show. So, a really big deal. It was a really big night for women of color in general. But she was just like, I love that speech. I love her. Mm-hmm. She's so beautiful. And I just thought she did a really amazing job.
Yeah. I got to confess, I haven't actually seen the TV show that she won for.
This seems to be a theme. We talk about TV shows that Gabe hasn't actually seen.
Yes. I'm behind the curve on some of these. She won for How to Get Away with Murder, which is part of the Shonda Rhimes.
TGIT.
Okay. I have several friends that, I mean, that is what they live for, is these shows. So I definitely have seen through people's Facebook posts and social media, like, the impact of how much these shows are loved. From the reaction of others.
Yes.
I know that this award, you know, was deserved. Randy, you and I were discussing yesterday. Yeah. I mean, I think one of our favorite parts of her getting the award was the moment where they called out her name. She goes over, and the first thing she did was hugged Taraji P. Henson, who was also nominated in the same category.
Exactly, for Empire.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Gave her, like, a big hug.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Viola Davis goes up on stage. The camera cuts back to Taraji P. Henson, and she is standing and applauding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's the only one standing at that point in time. Like, this wasn't part of a standing ovation.
Yeah. No.
This is her getting up there, and she is applauding aggressively.
Yes.
And to me, you know, kind of rewatching that as we did yesterday, it really looked like it looked like a football coach.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you know, this is
it.
You know, you're the quarterback, you're in the game, we've reviewed the play.
Yes.
Like, and I seriously think that maybe had Taraji P. Henson won the same award, and it would be her being the first black woman to get that award.
Yeah.
I would bet you money that she had basically the same speech ready.
Oh, yeah.
And that they discussed it in advance. It's like, okay, one of the two of us
could win.
And we need to seize, you know, this opportunity.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It was perfect.
Yes. Yeah. It was because I was like, we did it.
Yeah.
We made it there. So that was amazing. And, you know, like I said, it was just an amazing night. And like Andy Samberg, I made a comment about how diverse it was compared to the Oscars. Exactly. So it was just like a really diverse group of actors and shows that won.
He was kind of making a joke, but he was making a serious point.
Yeah, exactly.
He was lightheartedly observing.
Yeah.
You know, this is some legit diversity here.
Yes.
Whereas the Oscars was the whitest one ever.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was really cool. Viola Davis won. Mm-hmm. Regina King won for Best Supporting Actress in a Limited Series.
Right.
For American Crime, which I never saw that show. I heard of it, but I never saw it.
But she's been around for a while because everyone instantly was like, she was on 227.
Yeah. Which,
I don't remember.
Which
on
227. I never saw. It
was a good show.
I watched.
Oh, this is some 80s TV here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is some mid 80s TV. But I mean, it was, you know, like little white boy me sitting in rural Ohio was watching 227 back in the day. So,
what was it about?
It was just about people living in, you know, living together in a, you know, townhouse in, you know, some inner city, probably New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, probably Brooklyn or something.
There was a whole set of Brooklyn. Yeah, there was a whole set of, you know, living in a brownstone, hanging out on the stoop. There was Jack Hay, who was hilarious. And there was a little old lady who, you know, used to kind of poke her head out the window and make these just, you know, that sort of unfiltered, the only person who can say it is the one who's been around longer than everybody else. It was a quality show. So I don't remember Regina King's role in 227, but you got to go back and find 227.
I remember J.K. Harris. I watched her when she was like on Sister, because I watched Sister.
Okay.
She was really good on that show. So yeah, Regina won, and also Uzo Aduba won for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama Series, and she won for the same role last year, but for a comedy series.
Right.
So she's the new Ed Asner.
She's the new Ed Asner. So they talked about this as a possibility in the intro. She's only the second actor to ever do this.
Yeah.
The only other one was Ed Asner to win for the same role, drama and comedy.
Yeah.
And I just started watching Orange is the New Black this week, so I can finally
discuss. How do you like it?
I thought it was great. So the first episode sucks. Yeah. Right? The first episode is
all about Piper. Yeah. And you don't really care about her.
And she's bad enough. Like, I understand, okay, they're trying to establish that she's just... But
the pilot is always a lot to get through.
Oh, it's terrible. And Jason Biggs is the husband. I'm just like, oh, these people. Yeah. I hate these people.
But it gets better.
So last night we saw episodes 2 and 3. And episode three of the first season, a couple spoilers here, is we get to really meet Laverne Cox's character. And so seeing the way they give a little bit of her origin story, you know, we get to see what her life was like before she transitioned. See what it was like in the early stages. Meet her spouse, her wife, their child. How difficult that was. So there was a lot of discussion during the Emmys about transgender issues. Jeffrey Tambor won his second time for this Transparent. Which, you know, I think is a mixed bag because people are applauding this for, you know, bringing a discussion of transgender issues. But then I also hear criticism, you know, from the transgender community saying, hey, why is there, you know, some just straight cis male playing this role? Can't we get a transgender individual to represent our community? So, I mean, I can't argue against that. That's a totally legit criticism. But so to see that and then balance that with Laverne Cox playing this role was incredible.
I mean, it's just really great. She does a really good job. And it just keeps getting better and better. So wait till we get to the third season. And yeah, so I was saying that luckily... that was actually when they show, her, well, they show her as a firefighter. It's not her. That's actually her twin brother.
Really?
It's like how fortuitous that they would hire her. And she has a twin brother who can also act.
Holy cow.
Yes.
That is pretty amazing.
I know, right?
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Just worked out perfectly for everybody.
Okay. So big Emmy news.
opens our show. Big Emmy news.
So now.
Yeah, what's happening in the series world?
I know, right?
The fun's over. Jamie gets to bring it down. So yesterday, some good news, but still bad news. Because of this kind of continual attack on Planned Parenthood and other abortion providers, the Senate turned yesterday from defunding to the 20-week ban and tried to take up the 20-week ban and vote the 20-week ban out in Congress. The Senate did block it yesterday, so that was a good victory. Obama, so, of course.
Just to be clear, this is in Washington. This is different from our 20-week ban here in the States.
Well, it's basically the same bill, but yes, it's a different version of it.
So in Washington, D.C., in Congress.
In Congress. So that would have been a nationwide 20-week ban everywhere. So much more dangerous as well. But it did get blocked. I'm sure it'll come back. Obama said he would veto it if it ever did, you know, get through. But luckily we've got the, you know, 41 votes we need to stop it from even being considered for a vote in Congress, because this is a dangerous bill. I mean, what we're seeing everywhere is that, you know, more and more women are being forced to wait later into pregnancy because of all the things that we've put in place, the 24-hour waits and the closings of clinics and all those kinds of things. But also, you know, at 20 weeks is when women start getting the anatomy scans and all those things and find out that things are going wrong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got all these laws that are forcing women to wait longer to get access to abortion care. And then we've got, you know, kind of this confluence of when all these tests have to happen, and really puts women who are in, you know, a crisis situation even in a worse position. So, luckily, that stopped in Congress. There is still one in Ohio pending.
Right.
But, you know, we haven't seen any action on it for a while. So we'll kind of see with that one as well.
Right. The more I hear about 20-week bans, I mean, I think most people understand that you're at that point in the pregnancy. Everybody who's had a kid and who's been at that point and remembers, you know, how nervous you are in those later ultrasounds where you're starting to get a more focused picture of, you know, the fetal anatomy. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying. So I think a lot of people understand that. The layer that I'm hearing from a lot of our colleagues is presenting a completely different picture, which is equally valid. And they're saying, you know, nobody's talking about the fact that this is a lot of times kind of that last point where somebody can get a procedure without having to go to a specialist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're at this point purely for financial reasons.
Oh yeah.
You know, they went in for that first term procedure, couldn't come up with the cash. And it's only because of, you know, the difficulty of raising that amount of money that they missed the window for that, you know, unfortunately that less expensive, less invasive procedure. And so now they're in this, you know, sort of middle term around 20-week period.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, as you get further and further into pregnancy, it gets more expensive. So, you know, you go in for your first appointment and it's, you know, you've got to have $600 and they don't have that much. So they go home and they finally come up with the $600. They go back 3 weeks later and now it's $900.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it does. It keeps pushing it back and back. There was a great story. Actually, it's one of the stories that you hear in the After Tiller documentary that they're actually showing at OSU. Mm-hmm. We'll have it on our Facebook page because I can't remember what the date is. But about a woman who, you know, had a procedure appointment in the first trimester, didn't have the money, so had to cancel it, and then had an appointment a couple weeks later when she did have the money, and then her kid got sick and she had to cancel it. And, you know, this is what happens. These are the true stories of these women who, you know, had to jump through the hurdles, had to get to the clinic twice when they don't live anywhere near a clinic, have to come up with the money. And, you know, that's what happens. They end up at 18, 19, 20 weeks, not because they waited to delay their decision or any of those kinds of things, but they couldn't get access to it until then.
Right.
So, you know, you get Christina Hagen talking about how the heartbeat bill is just going to encourage women to, you know, have abortions earlier because we'll ban it, you know, later on. Well, just that's completely contrary to everything else that they've done in the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. She emphasized that she believes that women who seek abortion should get it as early as possible. Mm-hmm. But yet all of these, you know, these bans target women who, you know, weren't able to do that. And so often it's, you know, it's just a financial thing.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, like, I don't disagree that, like you say, you would want to get it done early, but you can afford it. But on the flip side of with the heartbeat bill, most people don't even know at that point in time. I mean, I'm seriously 6 to 8 weeks. I mean,
no.
You could have still had another cycle. I mean, there's a lot of factors. So that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
exactly.
one, I mean, they're all ridiculous, but that bill in particular is just like,
are you
kidding me? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So all of these things, you know, if politicians wish that women who, you know, had procedures, had them earlier, if they understood that financial aspect of the story, I mean, not too many people are aware of the movement to repeal Hyde, but that is absolutely why that needs to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, there should be tax dollars that pay for abortions. Yeah. And one of the big reasons is to prevent women from having to go to the 20th week.
But they don't, I mean, they don't care.
No.
The whole point is that if you were going to be, their whole point, if you say that is, well, if you were going to be having sex, then you should have made sure that either you were using birth control, and if you were, it's not 100% it fails. And in that case, well, then you shouldn't have been having sex, or you should have made sure you would have enough money to do whatever you needed to do. Like, yeah.
Only rich people are allowed to have sex.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So on that note.
Yeah. On that note of contraception.
And rich people.
Access,
let's talk about Congress.
Taking away healthcare. I know. Full of millionaires. Exactly. So they don't have to worry about anything. And that's the whole point, is that rich women can still get whatever they need and poor women can't. And so now we're coming to the point of that they're talking about defund. Well, you know, they've been talking about defunding Planned Parenthood for a while now. And so the vote is coming up on September 30th. And if they, so Republicans are trying to say that if they do not defund Planned Parenthood, if there's any money in their in the budget for them, then they're going to shut down the government. They did this before. Like, what was the reason they even did it before? Because they wouldn't raise they wanted to raise the debt ceiling.
Was that's right.
They wanted to raise the debt ceiling back in 2012. And when it happened then, so basically, and what happens when you shut the government down? So the parks won't be open. None of the federal buildings will be open, like Social Security, Medicaid.
Right. But not only the buildings not open,
Nobody gets Social Security.
Right.
Now, I'm pretty sure they still cut the checks, actually.
They do?
They still cut the checks.
If they get their shit together,
yeah. So like the checks still get cut, but like if you need to apply for Social Security because you're retiring, there's nobody there to do that, or you know you need to apply for veterans benefits or Medicaid or Medicare or any of those things.
The impact to veterans, the impact to you know, people who rely on federal benefits,
yeah,
you know, that really hits them hard.
Yeah. Exactly. Federal workers don't actually get their paychecks.
No, they do not get paid. Congress
gets paid. Yes.
There is one guy, I'm not going to remember his name, but there is one person who put forth a bill saying that if they do a government shutdown, then Congress should not get paid. And apparently the last time they had the shutdown, he gave his salary to charities in his district. But also the whole thing is, even if you defund Planned Parenthood, they get plenty of private money. And first of all, like you just said, the Hyde Amendment, no federal money goes to abortion anyway. All of these other agencies will be closed. Planned Parenthood will still be open.
Yes.
Right. They're not a government agency.
Yeah, no. They're not a government agency, as many people might think, like also the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, not a government agency. They're lobbyists. But yeah, so it'll still be open. All of these other things will be affected. They're still going to be operating. Abortion will still be happening.
All the rich men in Congress will still be getting, you know, paid, but they're going to be talking about how poor women shouldn't have cancer screenings. I mean, that's really what's happening.
Really?
Here.
Exactly. And the whole thing is first of all, they did nothing wrong in the videos, but regardless of what you think of those videos, if they were talking callously or whatever, abortion is legal. It's still legal to have an abortion here in the United States. We decided that over 40 years ago. Yeah. And I saw a really great meme. I never say it right. One of those. And it was basically just saying, you know, I don't care if Planned Parenthood is an abortion theme park with abortion water slides and, you know, abortion masseuses, whatever. Abortion is legal. You can get one. It's not a bad word.
No.
Yeah. There's that.
And this fight at the federal level is sort of being steered on both sides from Ohio.
Yeah.
It's Speaker John Boehner, who I believe doesn't actually support the idea of shutting down the government.
He voted to defund them, but he doesn't want to shut the government down because of
that. On the other side of it is Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, who is rabidly anti-abortion. Yeah.
Please, can I shut down the government?
And would sacrifice everything to go after Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he hates Planned Parenthood and the women that get services from them and would stop at nothing to shut them down. Both of them are from Ohio. Unfortunately, we're at ground zero here to see this federal battle.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And you know what's so ironic about them is that, you know, their Saint Ronald Reagan was for Planned Parenthood and birth control, but you know, and also, you know, the Pope is here this week, and a lot of them, you know, are Catholic, very religious, and the Pope, you know, has said a lot of things about helping with poverty. It's controversial how you may feel about it, but he has talked about forgiving women who have an abortion,
not that they need his
forgiveness. and also he's talked about climate change, all of things like which the right are just like, no. All of a sudden, first, their religion informs, you know, how they make their decisions, how they view things. But then when the Pope comes out and says things like that, then it's, oh, well, I don't get my economic policy from the Pope.
Yeah.
Like, really? Okay.
They're full of revisionist history.
Oh, yes, so. For sure.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Exactly. It's really sad and crazy. Okay.
So that's the defunding and the craziness at the federal level. At the state level, we also have defunding. Senate President Keith Faber, we might have talked about this in a previous episode. He's pledged to bring out new legislation to defund Planned Parenthood. There's already an existing bill on the House side. He's in the Senate, so we would have a pair of bills. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to look pretty similar, we think.
I would think, but...
And Planned Parenthood's also been defunded once already here in Ohio.
Yeah.
That was a reprioritization of funds. It sent Planned Parenthood to the bottom of the pole, the totem pole, back of the line, however you want to say it.
Yeah.
Along with a bunch of other people.
Along with a bunch of other people who have nothing to do with any of this. So you know, we'll likely see yet another set of hearings on defunding this organization, probably pushed along by Kasich's need to appeal to Republican voters as he runs for president.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And you can, I don't have the exact figures, but you can still, so I was speaking with someone from Planned Parenthood about this, like after they stopped getting their Title X money, specifically like in the Cincinnati area, how the pregnancy, teen pregnancy rates and the STD rates have really gone up significantly.
Yeah.
So that's a real like tangible thing. Like they took away that money and this is what happens, but they claim that there's other centers that can take care of what Planned Parenthood does.
But nobody actually calls them. And the last list they had when they were doing this the last time included dental clinics, because that's where I go to get my family planning services.
Bobby Jindal, Louisiana, his list.
Yeah, his list included those too.
Bobby Jindal. Yeah.
But what you were saying is when they remove Title X funds, this is another instance where it doesn't directly punish Planned Parenthood.
No.
It just tells Planned Parenthood patients.
Yeah.
You know, the men and women who rely on these services, there's no more money for you to go. Planned Parenthood still offers everything that they did before. It's just that the patients don't have access to the funds to pay for these services.
Yeah. Yep.
And these are low-income individuals.
Because most of the services, you know, are based off of income. And so, but at the same time, if they are getting less money, getting less federal money, then even though they're trying to keep it affordable and base it off of people's income, you know, they still have doctors and staff that, you know, work for them for, I'm sure, probably a lot less than they would get in private practice, but they still have to get paid, you know. And so that makes the price go up no matter what they do, because then you're taking away that federal money. But abortion is still happening because they're not getting any money.
Well, and
for
frankly,
that anyway.
There's probably going to be more. I mean, that's the thing. Exactly. Here. Let's take away people's birth control.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to say, well, I don't have birth control, so I just won't have sex anymore. Like, I'm going to use a less effective form, condoms or whatever, because I can get them from freezer somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm going to get pregnant and I don't want to be pregnant. So, right. I mean, we saw it in Indiana too. They closed a Planned Parenthood in southern Indiana, a rural town in Indiana. And like this rural town in Indiana had an HIV outbreak after they shut down the Planned Parenthood. So, you know, it doesn't stop people from doing things. Mm-hmm. It just stops them from being protected while, you know, having sex. So there's that. And we could have hearings actually as early as next Tuesday on the House version on the 29th. And then on the 30th, the same day that they might, you know, shut the federal government down, maybe we should just shut the state government down too. The Ohio House could vote on the Down syndrome ban here in Ohio too. So it's been pending for a while. We talked about it before, banning abortion if a woman is doing it solely because of a prenatal Down syndrome diagnosis. We've had several parents speak out, parents who are raising children with Down syndrome saying that, well, you know, if we had the choice to do this, so everybody should have the choice to do this. This is something that you should choose to go into, not be forced into by the state. So we could see that bill, which, you know, is probably unenforceable, completely ridiculous. It does absolutely nothing to actually help these parents and children.
No.
But we're going
to
pass it anyway.
It's just going to lie to their doctors.
Yes. So...
Especially if that's the reason and you don't want to, you know, get in trouble, then
you're just
going to
really
have a choice. Yeah. Which is ridiculous.
And the news on this is that this past weekend, John Kasich pledged to sign this bill.
Yeah.
He was on CNN. He was asked by John Tapper. And before the question really got out of his mouth, the answer came, I would sign this yes.
He didn't even let him finish the question.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, I'll sign that.
He said, like, look, I'm a governor. I'm a CEO. I have to have a hand steady on the wheel. But in this case, I'm more than glad to say that, of course, I would sign it. He hasn't even seen the final bill.
No.
But he is eager to sign a ban.
Whatever.
Well, and he talks about how his hands on the steering wheel. Like, when's the last time he was in Ohio? Let's have that discussion. Yeah. Like, how are you the CEO when, like, you haven't set foot in this state in, like, a month or two?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Ohio Right to Life they're exactly right about him. Mm-hmm. Like you said, he doesn't even know what it is, but it's like abortion restriction.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Kasich's got
it.
His hand on the wheel, but Ohio Right to Life is actually steering
it. Yeah. Yes,
exactly.
For sure.
So John Kasich gets the walk of shame this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So, okay. Next up, we're going to talk about State Issue 1 for Ohio's election year. This is the first ballot initiative. What is Issue 1?
What is Issue 1? Well, Issue 1 is kind of a response because every day we get questions, especially when we talk about all these ridiculous bills. You know, Ohio is a like classic purple state. We elected Obama twice. You know, we have an amazing progressive senator in Sherrod Brown. And, you know, so... We're not this crazy Republican Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama. You know, like that's
Georgia's becoming more purple.
It is. We'll give you that one.
Slowly.
Okay, yeah.
But people always ask, how are we this crazy state in the Ohio legislature? Mm-hmm. And it is all because politicians draw their own legislative districts.
Yes.
So they get to pick their voters. So what you see is a bunch of districts where, you know, 70% of the voters in a district are Republican, or 70% of voters in a district are Democrat. So they're not even competitive on either side. So last year, at the very end of the legislative session, the legislature worked until 4 o'clock in the morning under the guise of Vernon Sykes and Speaker Batchelder, a Democrat and a Republican. And so they came up with this plan to have fairer district drawing. So it was a Republican and a Democrat. So it's not fabulous and amazing. It's not the one I would write. But, you know, we had a bipartisan compromise to draw districts better so that we have more representative districts so that your vote actually matters. You know, right now in my state Senate district, I'm bunched with a whole host of, you know, Delaware County, you know, Republicans. So my little vote in my, you know, tiny bit of Columbus that's in this big, huge district doesn't matter anywhere. So what issue one will do is redraw the districts in a more fair way so they're actually competitive, so that politicians actually have to be accountable to the voters in their district rather than just going out and, you know, passing abortion restriction after abortion restriction when we see time and time again that the people of Ohio don't agree with what's happening in our state legislature. Mm-hmm. So Narrow Poor Choice Ohio, along with a whole host of other organizations, including, I think, the Cameron Moore Commons, but the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, finally, and, you know, a whole host of conservative and liberal groups have all endorsed this this redistricting amendment. Yes. It is issue one, and we are definitely encouraging people to vote yes on issue one.
Yeah, it's a big push for it. I just went to a meeting last week with Ohio Voice, and we're going to be doing phone banking, and they're also having a big event, I believe, this weekend. But you can go on their website as well, and it has a whole like list of people and organizations that are endorsing it. And so I'm like very happy that this happened, and this was was this my first day? It might have been my first or second day. I started with NARAL, and we went, and they passed this.
Oh yeah, you did come to the state house with me,
and I was like, I cannot believe they've just passed a gerrymandering bill. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it really was. I mean, you know, Vernon Sykes was termed out. We luckily got his daughter, Amelia Sykes, in now, and she's amazing and wonderful. But, you know, he really was a statesman in the classic sense. He really wanted to do what was right for the people of Ohio. And, you know, he came together with another term limited legislator, and they said, you know what, this is how we're going to go out, and we're going to do something really good for the state. And it is, like I said, it's not perfect, but you know, it will vastly improve the way our districts are drawn. So please everybody vote yes
On state issue one coming up in this year's November election
in Ohio, which early vote starts in just a couple weeks.
Okay, cool, what's next?
Ooh. And, I was going to say, yesterday was actually National Voter Registration Day.
It was.
Which was very exciting, and I registered. Oh, I was already registered to vote, but you have to apparently re-register every time you move.
Yes.
Just so you all know, and I'm moving soon, so I went ahead and, like, changed my address so I would be ready.
Good plan.
Yes.
Because if you do it too close, it starts getting in trouble.
Oh, yeah. So a really great thing that's been popping up on Twitter, it's this hashtag Shout Your Abortion, which basically, you know, is just, people on there, talking about their experience, with abortion. And, it's been a really great thing. I think because, like, we have a lot of stigma because women don't feel comfortable, you know, speaking on it. Like, they should feel, some people feel like they should be ashamed, or that they should feel guilty or regret, and which they've shown study after study that most women feel relieved that, they were able to get an abortion. And, just to go, so yesterday, was National Voter Registration Day, and also, which I didn't know that actually until a few days ago, but initially I had, Columbus State Community College had called me, and they were telling us that they were doing this day of service that they do every year, and they wanted to do, they wanted one of their organizations to be NARAL. And so I was like, okay, great. So, so we ended up meeting up with OSA and doing some voter registration. I had 10 people come along. And then after we were done, I brought them back here to the office, and we all had lunch yesterday. And so I was just sitting around the table with these four ladies, and it was really great because they were just, you know, we have been talking about it all day. And so they were just started talking about their different experiences. And there was one woman here who, you know, was just candidly, you know, I had an abortion 8 years ago. And if the restrictions that they had in place now would have been in place when I was trying to get mine, it would just made it so, much harder. And, you know, she was able to, she actually went to Dr. Haskell's clinic in Dayton. Mm-hmm. And she was able to, you know, get part of it paid for by another organization to help her out. So it was just a really great conversation. Mm-hmm. And another one was talking about, she said her brother's girlfriend got an abortion recently, and was telling her, because it was more recent, how she had to jump through all of these hoops to get her abortion, mm-hmm. Because now you have to wait. There's protesters out there, and so it was a different situation for this woman rather than how it was 8 years ago. But I just thought that was a really great conversation, mm-hmm. because it was just so open and comfortable, and they were really able to, you know, talk more about how they feel about it. And I think for most women, it's something that, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, taboo. Like, mm-hmm. this is something that happened. It was the right decision for me, and I moved on. And she was like, you know, if I had kept this, you know, kept that pregnancy, then I wouldn't have my daughter that I have now, and I wouldn't have met my husband. So I just thought that was a really amazing story.
Well, and the backlash on this from the antis has been really interesting. I mean, they've been all about, like, why would you want to shout your abortion? You know, it was just one of those, like, classic, like, just shut up. Like, we don't want to hear your story. Why are you, you know, proud of what you did? And it's because that, I mean, it's that story exactly. Yeah. Having her abortion procedure set her up for success. She's in school. She's married. She has a child now that she can take care of and is emotionally ready to take care of. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the Down syndrome ban even, and the fact that, you know, when that bill is all about shaming women. Mm-hmm. You know, you shouldn't feel this way. You shouldn't want to have a procedure just because this. And that's more and more. I mean, they've gone whole hog into shaming women up one side and down the other for having abortion procedures. And it's kind of like they're like, wait, what? They're like, you're not, we didn't shut you up. Like, you still want to talk about your abortion even though I hate you for it? And I'm like, abortion is a good thing. One of the things I read was, well, this just shows that they are pro-abortion. They're not really pro-choice. And I was like, uh-huh. We are. When abortion is the decision that you need to make with your family, then yes, it is an amazing, wonderful thing, and everyone should have access to it, and it should be publicly funded. And, you know, these are the values that, you know, we've kind of shrunk away from for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, this shout your abortion has really kind of brought that to the forefront.
Yeah.
I think it shows that the stigma that we talk about so often is, it sort of comes in two flavors. Mm-hmm. You know, one form of stigma is something that people just naturally adopt because this is something that, you know, to many people is a private decision. They don't want to discuss it. But then there's also like an active campaign to generate additional stigma just mm-hmm. because, you know, the people that are on that side of it hate the procedure. And so they want to make people feel shame because mm-hmm. they had the procedure. It's intense. So that was the shout your abortion hashtag. Mm-hmm. And then a couple days prior, NARAL asked people to use the hashtag men for choice, mm-hmm. Which I did. I tweeted in. my first tweet was a picture of me with my coffee cup outside my kids' elementary school, because even though it was like my day off of work, you know, not a day off of parenting, so I still got to take the kids in. And that sort of made me think about it. You know, people like to paint this picture of, you know, single women getting abortions, mm-hmm. Which they do. But, you know, they like to, you know, sort of fabricate their own details about these people's lives. And they ignore the truth that there are a lot of, you know, married couples out there that seek, you know, mm-hmm. that need an abortion, mm-hmm. they might have a kid or two.
Yeah.
And that was actually my tweet that got the most attention, mm-hmm. was I said, many couples seeking an abortion already have a kid or two. Pro-choice does not equal anti-family.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. It does. Yeah. I mean, the statistics bear that out. 60% of women who go in and have an abortion already have a child at home. Mm-hmm. So this whole notion that, you know, they're just being duped. They're just, you know, playthings of the pro-choice movement. They're being told things and lied to and blah, blah. No, they know what being pregnant is. And they know at the end they can end up with a kid. They have one.
Exactly.
They've been through this.
Exactly.
You know? But it just, you know, again, just kind of paints women as these, you know, non-thinking unrational, you know, we need to make this decision for you, little lady, because we can't trust you with your own health.
It's so funny that they think that there aren't married women who would need an abortion, whether it is for a wanted pregnancy and something happens, or whether it's, oh my God, we're married, but we don't want any kids. Yeah. Like, that could also happen. Or we're married, we already have kids, and we don't want any more. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so, like, every different, there's a situation, or we can think of a different situation every time. So, I mean, it's just, but it's kind of crazy. Like you said, they're just like, oh, these loose women out here.
Well, and then ignoring the men in the conversation.
Yeah.
You know? And the fact that, you know, one of the stupid Ohio Right to Life billboards that they put up in Cleveland was, you know, men should take responsibility for their, you know, their having sex, or, you know, and it was just this very male shaming, like, you guys suck because you're not taking responsibility. You know, yes, when we look at, you know, statistics, it's single women having, you know, the majority of abortions, but it doesn't mean that there's not a guy standing there with her through that process.
There was a guy at some point.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, so just because they aren't married and therefore we don't see them officially in a relationship, which is a whole nother other show, you know, it doesn't mean that there aren't people in there that, you know, she's not having the abortion because every woman's not having an abortion because she's been abandoned by her man. And this whole notion that, you know, men suck and don't take responsibility for their actions is also just really shaming for men as well. So.
Yeah. Right. I had a friend tell me, like, after, like, right after she got married, when she was a newlywed and her husband, like, still at, in grad school, she was like, I don't care what happens. I don't care what I have to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to have a kid until this point in time, and I'll she was like, basically, I would use all of my options available to me. Mm-hmm. And then, like, this is a married woman, like, but hey, just because you're married doesn't mean you have to, you know, be having babies.
And I think the
you
short
don't have to be quiverful.
Yikes.
The short-sightedness to ignore you know, married couples isn't limited to abortion. It's exactly what you said. You know, she was looking at all of her options.
Yeah.
I don't think frequently enough, and, you know, I understand that, you know, single women out there, you know, they do need, you know, assistance. But every discussion on, you know, Hobby Lobby and birth control and, you know, should IUDs be covered and, you know, should emergency contraception be available at every pharmacy? Married couples need these, you know, as much, if not more.
Exactly.
You know, than single individuals do. And we don't ever talk about how, you know, normal married couples, you know, who are living lives that these conservative...
Contrary to popular belief, married people have more sex than single people.
Right. And so, you know, there are married... you know, Catholic Republican couples out there that are relying on these same birth control services.
Chris Christie talked about how he is Catholic and used birth control, and he wasn't talking about the rhythm method.
So, yeah, this whole ignoring of, like, what actual happens in real life is, I mean, because the statistic that I always heard was, you know, on average, you know, a woman is fertile for about 20 years while having sex. You know, it starts a little earlier, but, you know, there are periods. So, like, you spend 20 years of your life. If you want the, like, average two kids, you spend 20 years of your life avoiding pregnancy. So that, like, takes out all the while you're pregnant, postpartum, you know, all, trying to get pregnant, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's a long time.
Yes.
To not have an accident if you're not using birth control. Like, so people are using birth control, whether they want to say it or not. 99% of Catholics use birth control. So,
Yeah. I mean, we have two kids. There is not room in our budget for a third kid. If Republicans don't want, you know, families sized like mine to have additional, you know, assistance in the form of food stamps or, you know, increased expenses on, you know, healthcare or education costs, we have to limit our family sizes. You know, and it's our right to choose the size of our family.
Exactly.
So y'all got to back off.
Yes.
Of the fight against contraception.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Contraception is for men too. I know. What a thought.
Let's do the Title IX sports report. This was really cool.
This was really cool. And it's from like many weeks ago. It's been on the board for a really long time now. But so Kent State University in Ohio, woohoo, the home district of the amazing Kathleen Clyde in the state legislature, has a female kicker named April, and she is amazing and awesome and won the game many weeks ago and, you know, was carried off the field and, you know, was very much celebrated. And we just kind of wanted to give her a shout out because we thought that was an amazing story and wanted to kind of lift it up. Of course it was hilarious. I was checking out some of the conservative news sites cause you know, that's what we do for fun. And, exactly. They were all like, she's just another player. Why are you celebrating it? Cause she's a girl, blah, blah. I'm like, really? Like, you're the one who doesn't want her out there, but now you're saying that, you know, we shouldn't talk about her cause she's, you know, should be treated just like every other person. And we never celebrate kickers anyway, blah, blah. And it's just like,
yeah.
And I think it was probably written. He didn't say this, but by a male who was a kicker who never got any, you know, attention in his life because he was just, you know, the punter and, you know, he didn't get any
two different positions.
Yes, exactly. So. They are. But I'm going to guess that the field goal kicker gets a little bit more attention than the punter most of the time.
Absolutely.
So he was probably irritated that, you know, she was getting attention and he never did. But so, yeah, the April is amazing and wonderful and should
April
be celebrated.
April Goss, Kent State, only second woman ever to score a point in an NCAA football game.
Yep.
So
pretty freaking amazing.
It's a pretty good timeline sports board.
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's close it up, but let's get it on. Randy, what's happening?
Let's get it on. Okay.
Randy's going to start singing our segment.
I know, right? So next week, September 30th, Wednesday, which is the looming government shutdown possibly.
And the Down syndrome vote. You're going to have plenty of
time. I know,
about.
Right? I will be at Ohio University in Athens, and we're going to be at Jackie O's. I've heard awesome things. I've never been there before. But we're going to be doing a happy hour there with the Ohio University Med Students for Choice. It's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. at Jackie O's. It's going to be closed, but, you know, of course, you all are invited.
Open only to you.
Only open to the, you know, it's private NARAL club. So if you would like to come, as always, you can get in contact with us at volunteer@prochoiceohio.org. If you also are in the northern area and would like to get involved up there, you can get in touch with Annie, also volunteer@prochoiceohio.org. And you also look on the Facebook page, Keep Abortion Safe and Legal in Toledo. And then she has all the events going on because lots of stuff, of course, still going on in Toledo. So you can find out that way.
And then mark your calendars in Columbus, October 15th, Comedy for Choice. Mm-hmm. You can find all the details on our Facebook page. And then the following day in Cleveland, October 16th, Comedy for Choice. So we'll have some of the same comedians. Should be hilarious.
Woo-hoo. Have some fun.
Yes.
Drink some wine.
Okay. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.